Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Anne Cerruti, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here. And on such a beautiful day.
Chill in the air. Anytime is a good time to read your books. But I think winter's a nice time because it brings the warmth of Greek summers.
Yes, it's nice to regress back into, you know, back on the sunbed as it was back in August in these chilly days.
Yes. Yeah. I'm turning around to my book pile because you have written a series of seven.
Yes, books. Seven books, kind of crime books. I don't know, we could talk about whether they're crime books or not, but allegedly crime books, a series of seven based on the seven deadly sins, with the first one, The Messenger of Athens, being based, arguably, I would say, on the most interesting sin, which is the sin of lust. Mm-hmm. And the last one, number seven, which I finished last year, at the Feast of Artemis, being based on my favourite sin, the sin of gluttony.
Yes. And, okay, so they're called the Mysteries of the Greek Detective. Introduce us to your Greek detective.
Well, he's an interesting character in himself. He has some interesting properties that other fictional detectives don't have. His name is Hermes Diactoros. He's a bit of a snappy dresser in the style of Hercule Poirot. He likes his Italian suits and he loves his food, which he definitely gets from me. But his sartorial elegance is occasionally spoiled by his white tennis shoes. He likes to wear a pair of white tennis shoes, which he refers to as his winged sandals.
Yes, and he keeps them very pristine. He's constantly whiting them up to make sure that they sparkle and shine as much as a tennis shoe can. You touched upon there, his name is Hermes. He refers to them as his winged sandals. Mm-hmm. And there is a touch of the magic and sort of the Greek myths brought to life.
Yes, definitely. I mean, if I'm going to fess up here and admit that although the books are allegedly in the crime genre, there is a tiny bit of crossover going on and a tiny, tiny little bit of fantasy going on in there in the person of Hermes. He has certain mystical qualities, as you've said, but I encourage readers to read the book to find out what those qualities are.
Exactly. Well, it is possibly they become, because of that added soupçon of something, they become even more satisfying than a good detective story because he's able to really right the wrongs that so frequently we cannot.
Yeah, he's very much about natural justice. You know, all crime fiction is about justice and, you know, you have to write to a certain formula, which I'm fine with because I love crime fiction. It's what I grew up on. My first adult books were Agatha Christie and I think that shines through the books, actually. But Hermes, he kind of goes that extra mile because he's not so much interested in legal justice. These are no way my books are police procedurals. He is interested in natural justice. And not just, he doesn't just solve a crime in the books. He also, as you say, he puts right wrongs for some of the peripheral characters who have perhaps had quite sad lives or not behaved themselves very, very well. A bit like Santa Claus, he occasionally punishes the naughty and the nice.
It's coal and stockings Hermes land.
Yes, in a Greek island style. Yeah.
Let's touch upon something you just mentioned, which for me was incredibly evocative. You bring to life small Greek island, the internecine, you know, turgid, centuries-long, you know, tiny minds on tiny islands. You bring that to life so well.
Well, thank you, but it comes entirely from experience. Having lived there, I invite anyone to have a look at my website, but long story short, I was a Shirley Valentine and I ran away from a very respectable career here in the UK to go and marry a Greek fisherman and live for 6 years on a very tiny island, population of 2,000 people. So I lived that life at first hand. And it is exactly as you say. There's a wonderful Greek saying which translates roughly as the fewer the houses, the nastier the mouths. And there's so much truth in that. You know, you go to the Greek islands and you see this idyllic place and you think you might want to spend the rest of your life there. Well, I would say just be very careful what you wish for. It is a beautiful place. Greece is a fantastic place to spend time, but the small islands definitely have an undercurrent, and that is what the books are tapping into.
Yes, because I remember visiting my brother-in-law went out to Greece, and we met this man, Lucky, and he pointed to two telephone poles. So my mother's from there, and my father's from there. I mean, they were about 200 yards apart, two different places.
Yeah.
Mother's from there. Fathers from there, or like the mountain people and then the coastal people. Different.
Yeah, big difference. The island I lived on, it was those who lived in the harbour who regarded themselves as a cut above those who lived up the hill in the village. So that is still very much going on. And I heard stories when I was first there of in the very upper village, you know, in these very hilly villages, I was told stories that there were old ladies who never went to the harbour, which is a distance of what? A mile at best, and I didn't believe those stories, but do you know they are perfectly, perfectly true. There are people, women especially, who have such tiny, tiny lives. It's hard to imagine how they survive that, but that's one of the things that Hermes tackles. He comes across one of those very women and actually sets her free, which is, you know, a wish close to my heart, actually.
Yeah.
My weekday fix? Darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous.
And you came to that. What were you doing in the UK prior to that? What was your life like?
I had what we would call a very good job. You know, I was working for a major UK travel agency, and I had a very posh job title. Shall I tell you what it was?
Yes, please.
I was head of global information technology strategy.
Wow.
That's a great job title,
isn't
it?
That's a great job title.
Yeah, I was travelling all over the world. I was, you know, all five-star first class, you know, the black BMW, all that stuff. But I found that existence quite empty, actually. It was not me. You know, I'm not dissing anybody who's living that life and enjoying it, but it wasn't for me. And actually, the quieter life in the Greek islands, you know, we were largely self-sufficient and fishing and growing our food and keeping rabbits in the back garden for slaughter. Sounds a bit grim, doesn't it? But that life actually suited me quite well. The bit that didn't suit me too well was the position of women in Greek society, which I found that really tough. And I tackled that to some depth, actually, in The Messenger of Athens. I think the message on that would be, you don't know how free you are until some of those freedoms are taken away.
Yeah.
And in the end, what made me leave Greece and leave living in Greece on a permanent basis was that kind of culture gap, really. And having been a free woman, you know, making a living and looking after myself, I found it quite hard to be at the bottom end of the social scale.
Well, and also, as we were talking about small island life, they're not really going to take to foreigners either, I wouldn't imagine. Was that an element that you ran into?
It kind of was, yeah. I mean, the more you learn Greek, I learned to speak Greek because I think it's an absolute necessity if you're going to go and live abroad, you have to speak the language. And the more of the language you speak, of course, the more you learn and the more the Greek attitude to foreigners. And of course, Greeks are naturally very welcoming people, but there are certain nationalities, I shan't name them, that they're not too keen on. You might want to take a guess at one of them, certainly, these days. But it wasn't so much that I certainly felt welcome, but I felt kind of looked down on by people like my mother-in-law, who's a lovely woman but completely illiterate. But she thought I was a bit of an idiot because I didn't know how to gut fish or make moussaka or any of those basic life skills that she couldn't believe a woman didn't possess. So
right.
I think to this day she kind of looks down on me as a bit of a numpty, actually.
A practicing idiot.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you might know books and words and learning, yeah, but dinner?
Yeah, but can you gut a scorpion fish? No, you can't, no.
And so how did you meet your husband? And
Well, I went on holiday. My sister and I, we both had very stressful jobs. You know, the Thomas Cook. The Thomas Cook job was a very stressful job, and she was working for the Coca-Cola Corporation, and we were both really stressed out. So, we went on holiday together. We had booked a 2-week package holiday. I went off to this tiny place in the Dodecanese Islands, not far from Rhodes. And on the first day there, we were walking around the harbour. You know, we'd done the breakfast thing and we'd had some of that fabulous thick Greek yogurt with honey and, you know, the thick Greek coffee. And we were looking for something to do. And at the harbour side, there was a guy there who was offering boat rides to the more distant beaches, you know, and he got these fabulous blue eyes and, you know, great legs in his shorts and skin, that lovely caramel colour, you know, because English men, they never go that caramel colour. They just don't do that.
My husband, after 2 weeks on honeymoon, looked down at his chest. He said, "I've achieved the colour of sand."
There you go. But this guy got the lovely caramel skin, and he just looked at us and he smiled and he said, "Girls, come on my boat."
And what
could we do? And a year later, he and I were married. It was the beginning of a holiday romance. Mm-hmm. When I left, I kind of thought, well, you know, that was that. But he rang me and said, come back. And I did. And the rest is history.
Right. And so when you came back, you started writing.
Yes.
Tell me about your son, if I half Greek.
Yeah, when I came back to the UK, I had a child in tow. My son was 4 years old at that time, and he ended up going to English school. But I maintained the connection with my ex. My ex and I went through a rough patch, but I'm happy to say he and I are the best of friends again now. So that's made it very easy for my son to stay connected with his Greekness. He did his national service a couple of years ago, because that's something you don't think about while you're having your Shirley Valentine moment,
right?
And you're having, you know, your half Greek child, that when he gets to 18 he's going to get his call-up papers. But actually he did his year in the Greek army, and we joined the Greek Marines, in fact, and really enjoyed that. He had a great time doing that. But of course, when I came back to England with him, that put me in the unenviable position of being a single parent, you know, and water had flowed under the bridge. My glittering career was no more. That was a tough time in my life, and so I started to write. I had always written, but I started to write The Messenger of Athens, really to resolve my conflicted feelings about Greece, because I was looking back from a semi-detached house in the north of England, thinking, well, do you know what went wrong with that? I went out there, you know, to this idyllic Greek island. What went wrong? And that's why I wrote The Messenger of Athens. But I didn't want it to be autobiographical. I wrote it as a crime novel, because that's what I like to read. But at the same time, I wanted to show readers what I'd discovered when I got to Greece. I wanted to show the reality behind that sunny facade, that it's not all retsina and olives on the beach. And that's what became The Messenger of Athens. And I think I found my voice, really, I think, in writing about Greece. I'd written stuff before, you know, gritty northern thrillers. And, you know, they'd almost found publishers, but not quite. But I think when I started writing about Greece, because I love Greece so deeply, you know, I'm madly in love with the country. I think it's, you know, I have a deep soul relationship with the place. And I think that really comes across through the books, which isn't to say what I write is in any way sugar-coated, as you'll know, having read a couple of them. You know, I write what I see. I write the good and I write the bad, which I think is important, you know, for a balanced view. But as a huge compliment to me, and to underline the authenticity of the books, they are published in Greece also. They were picked up by a Greek publisher.
Fantastic.
Who took them as, you know, yes,
thank
okay.
Thank you very
yeah,
much.
Yeah, that is a huge compliment.
RadioGorgeous.com.
And the great thing about it is that through Hermes, you do maintain, because he has such a lust for life, and he has such a lust for food and good feeling and good people when he finds them, that you do still get that sun-infused feeling, you know, and that real love and zest for life that you do find on the Greek island.
Yeah, I think Hermes in himself, I hope he embodies what is one of the tenets of my life, which is carpe diem. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not going to be here forever. And there are things to enjoy. No matter how poor your situation, there are still mm-hmm. small things that you can enjoy. Yeah. And I think he embodies that and encourages everyone to be the best that they can be. However, should he come across someone who is beyond the pale and beyond redemption, they will be appropriately dealt with. And I think we'd all like someone like that. Oh. Lives, yeah, you're like,
doesn't he feel like visiting London? You know, come on over.
Please take
or
a number
of your siblings. Yeah. And it does seem as though you've taken that to heart. You've taken the good things with you. And one of the things that you've taken with you is Greek cooking. Tell me about your cooking.
Greek cooking. Well, I was always a cook and, you know, have always loved food. Mm. But Greek food, it's had a bad rep in the past, you know, and I'm hoping to do my bit to correct that mm. because Greek food at its best is absolutely fantastic. You know, fresh salad from the garden, you know, just one of the best meals I've ever had in Greece. Kotletes, you know, freshly picked kotletes, just washed, a few spring onions on the top, a little sea salt, a little lemon juice from a lemon picked from the tree, a little bright green olive oil, a loaf of bread baked in an olive wood fire and perhaps some tzatziki on the side. What more could you want than that? A little feta, perhaps. You don't need any more than that. It's top quality produce. It's top quality baking because, you know, the Greeks are great bakers. And Hermes' favourite food is bougatsa, which is a wonderful creamy, you know, vanilla cream pastry sprinkled very liberally with cinnamon and icing sugar, which you can buy on pretty much any street corner in the city. It's wonderful, wonderful stuff. If you've never tried it, I urge you to try it. But he loves his food, and I almost write recipes into the books, you know, and a lot of my readers have said, you know, it's encouraged them to try Greek cooking and perhaps be a little bit more adventurous when they're in Greece in the tavernas, perhaps try some of the seafood that you might be a little bit nervous about because it's not...
What would you recommend?
Definitely. Anything with squid or octopus. You know, we tend to be a bit nervous about that. The British certainly are a bit nervous about squid and octopus. But, you know, fresh squid is delightful. It's not got that rubbery thing. It's just, you know, it's delightful. It's wonderful. All you need to do with that, if you just season flour and pan fry it and a little freshly squeezed lemon juice, a little sea salt. You know, it's wonderful food. I would encourage everyone to try that. Mm. Some of the meat dishes, some of the lesser known meat dishes, chicken with walnut sauce, perhaps. Mm. Some of the vegetarian dishes, you know, a lot of Greek food is perfect for vegetarians. In the winter, we couldn't afford much meat, so we ate a lot of vegetarian food. Everything with garlic, of course. Throw however much garlic you are thinking about putting in there, double it. The same with your spices. You know, the traditional spices in Greek cooking, there's cinnamon and cloves and cumin, which they put in almost everything, which gives it that kind of almost that Middle Eastern flavour. Rose water, of course, and bergamot in sweet stuff. All those unusual tastes that we're not common in this country, but, you know, I'd encourage anyone, get on the internet, buy a Greek cookbook, and just have a go and try something a little bit different.
Fantastic. So you've done the seven deadly or deadlier sins. What's next for you?
At the moment, I'm working on something that's not a Hermes novel. It's still set in Greece, but it's not Hermes. But so many readers ask me everywhere I go, it's when is the next book coming out? So yes. I think I will undoubtedly be doing another Hermes book. I've done the seven deadly sins, thought about the seven heavenly virtues, but boring. No one's interested in virtue. So I'm thinking about the Ten Commandments.
Aha.
I think there's plenty of food for thought there in the Ten Commandments.
Ah, Anne Zarudi, you have completely evoked a Greek... I'm smelling moussaka now.
Yeah, wonderful stuff, isn't it?
Thank you so much for coming on Radio Gorgeous.
My pleasure, absolutely.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us, contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com, and to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox. Who can think of anything better, darling? Oh,
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production 2014, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.